Oh,
in a world
so much
in which
better.
Movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimmel.
Alan is definitely the good, by the way, if it's good, bad, and ugly. Alan Adams joining us in studio. Welcome. Well, no question in my mind, but mostly good.
I appreciate that.
How was your weekend, sir? We were just chatting. Well, we were distracted chatting in the break about the final show for anybody at Bangor Arts Exchange, and the focus group closed it down with a great one on Friday night.
Yeah, had a great crowd. You know, some feelings were felt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's it's what like I sort of alluded to at the show. Our first performance there was October of 2017, so it had been 7 years. By my math, we had done we'd performed on that stage right around 50 times.
Wow.
You know, so it's like home, and to say goodbye to your home, for whatever reason is tough. So, you know, onward and upward, we're not going anywhere. Well, I mean, we'll go somewhere so we can do things, but we're not entirely sure where that is yet, but, we'll keep people posted.
A street corner near you.
Yes. Busking. We'll do improv around a fire in a trash can.
Yep. And an empty guitar case. Fantastic. We're going to talk movies, but first off, want to do a little theater talk as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I went today, actually, to a student matinee of The Women of Lockerbie, which was the first show of the 24-25 season at the School of Performing Arts Division of Theater and Dance at the University of Maine. Plays by Deborah Brivort, directed by Dee Grenke. Really beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, I'm familiar with for those who are unfamiliar with the story, it's basically, the deal is essentially, it revolves around the aftermath of the 1988 or 89 bombing of the of a Pan Am flight over Lockerbie, Scotland, that tells the story of a woman who is still struggling to deal with her grief, having lost her son in that tragedy, and her encounter with a group of women in Lockerbie who are dedicated to helping people, like reunite people with the remains of their loved ones, and barring that, trying to retrieve like their clothes and washing the clothes and all that. It's really not what you'd call it. It's not a traditional narrative, really. It's got some sort of Greek drama vibes. It was a lovely set. The young performers were all excellent. Alas, this was the last opportunity to see it, so so you can't get out there and check it out. But I just I reached out to you, Rich, and just I don't know. It's I feel like it's nice for students to know that the work they're doing does connect and does impact their audiences, even if they don't receive an official quote unquote official review, whether that be print, online, or otherwise.
Excellent. Well, glad to hear it went well.
Yeah, they did. They're doing great work over there. And I expect more of the same as the season continues.
All right. Well, we're talking movies here and a couple of interesting ones that you're going to chat about today. Taking us back to the glorious 1970s.
Yeah, it's funny how these things work out sometimes, huh? So I got two for you this week. One is a recent Netflix release. It's called Woman of the Hour. It's Anna Kendrick's directorial debut. Mm-hmm. And it revolves around the story of Rodney Alcala, who was the serial killer who appeared on an episode of The Dating Game back in the late 1970s.
Man.
It was a wild time.
Yes.
It's not really a new release anymore, but I did see it last week when I wasn't here. Saturday Night, Jason Reitman's movie about the 90 minutes leading up to the first episode of Saturday Night Live. As someone who's a longtime fan, and I know you're a longtime fan, and we were both really kind of looking forward to this movie, I figured I'd seen it, and we probably ought to talk about it a little bit. So which one would you like to start with?
Well, let's stay right there. Let's go with Saturday Night, because I'm curious to hear what you thought.
It's interesting. I feel like I liked it more than a lot of people did. I feel like the reviews have been kind of on the mixed side, which I get. Because here's the thing, I was talking to somebody the other day, and we kind of landed on the this sort of comparison at the same time. I don't know how many people remember Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
I loved it.
The Aaron Sorkin show, yeah. Behind the scenes of a sketch comedy show where you never see the sketch comedy. Mm. That was a problem for some people. Not for me, not for you.
No.
This movie is very similar in that there are some snippets of like rehearsals and stuff, but you don't see any of the sketches. It's just all about the turmoil and chaos, good-natured and otherwise, that's taking place behind the scenes as Lorne Michaels and company prepare to launch this brand new thing. Like it's easy to forget because I mean, you know, SNL's an institution. Like we're talking, they're in their 50th season right now. You know what I mean? So it's like. You know, the majority of people, don't remember a time when SNL didn't exist. You know, it is a generational touchstone in that, you know, basically shorthand for how old you are, because it's like all you have to do is ask someone what their favorite SNL cast was. And it's like, oh, so that's when you were 14.
Right, right. And I remember watching that first episode with George Carlin as the host and as I'm sure you learn in the movie, too, that first episode was nothing like any other episode because they had, I think Carlin did a couple of different stand-up bits. They had several other people as guest stars, guest appearances.
Bunch of music acts. Yeah. And that's funny. It's that's one of the sort of central points in the movie. Like, I'm not going to go, like, plotting is, like, I basically gave you the plot. It's the 90 minutes before SNL, the first episode of SNL, and it is the...
Which I think threw some people, too, who I guess, I don't know whether they expected was going to be a 50-year retrospective, but I don't think they understood the tight focus of this movie.
Yeah, and it's like, and that's part of what I loved about it, was because, again, when you're talking about this sort of, like, massive, like, sweeping cultural institution, like, you gotta pick your spots, because otherwise, you don't have time, you don't have space, and stuff doesn't get a chance to breathe. But like you said, it's one of the central points that we touchstones of the film is they keep coming back to the corkboard that has all the acts pinned up on it, and it's just variations on, well, that's too much show, and trying to figure out how they're going to scale it down, because it is like you said, like, and again, we think about it because it has been the same way for so long. We feel like, oh, it's always been that way. Well, like, I mean, it's not like Lorne Michaels didn't wake up one morning and be like, oh, here's the formula. Monologue, sketch, commercial parody, sketch, you know, musical act, weekend update, repeat, done. You know, it sounded like we're so used to it that it's like, oh, of course, how else would you do it? Turns out there were some other ways to do it. As we learn, as we watch, not only do we meet the sort of original not ready for primetime players. There's a little joke about that name tucked in there among many, many other sort of Easter eggs and deep cuts for anyone who's a fan of the show. But one of the things about the cast that I really enjoyed was I didn't really know who any of them were, like actor-wise. Like I didn't know who the performers were.
Right.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah, because it allows you to believe even more that they are these people they're portraying.
And the thing about it, and the wonderful sort of parallel that comes with that is nobody knew who the hell those people were in 1975.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like these were all like unknown quantities. That was part of the reason why they wound up like being able to make the show in the first place.
Unless you were in New York and you'd gone to see National Lampoon's Lemmings, who are these people?
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea, you know, and you get to see some glimpses of the sort of, you know, interpersonal relationships and resentments that, you know, would eventually bubble over the course of the first few years of the show. Like, you know, Chevy Chase and John Belushi don't like each other. Dan Aykroyd's hitting on everybody and trying to make peace. The ladies feel marginalized, as does Garrett Morris, played by LaVorne Morris, who is outstanding in this. And again, was the only like cast member where I recognized the actor. I think everybody else had done stuff, but just like, I mean, they're all young people, so they're all doing stuff on Netflix and TikTok. I don't know what the hell's going on. I said, and so basically you have young Lorne Michaels just, you know, pinballing around the studio, dealing with actors, yes, but also dealing with writers who were notably lunatics.
Was our a friend of the show, Alan Zweibel?
He was represented. Alan Zweibel was added to the writer's room in that 90 minutes, according to this movie, because Lauren wound up in a bar looking for Belushi and found Zweibel working with a hacky comic played by Brad Garrett.
Love it.
And just pulled in. And then he was in the thing. And great. And it's like Al Franken being sort of an anarchist around Michael O'Donohue, like all these names that you know being represented.
Jim Henson.
See, this is very cool. This was a very cool choice that I kind of loved because Jim Henson and Andy Kaufman were there for that first episode. Both of them are played by Nicholas Braun.
Oh, wow. Love that.
It was such a neat idea, and it's just like it took me as and I'm like, "Oh, because like, you know, these two people are probably the most disconnected from what is happening."
Right.
Just due to the nature of their work, like they're both coming from different directions, but they're both very much outliers in their way. And so so casting Nicholas Braun, who looks a little bit like Andy Kaufman, and man, you throw a long hair wig and a beard on him, and he went full Henson, and so you bring those two together, and so it's like, oh, okay, so you're juxtaposing, you know, and it's, you know, for a lot of filmmakers, I'd be like, what was the rationale behind that choice? But with someone like Jason Reitman, who I feel like grew up in that world, I feel like that was a very conscious choice. But yeah, some other notables. I think my favorite casting, just because I always love to see him because he reminds me of his dad, Cooper Hoffman as Dick Ebersol.
Oh, wow.
Was always great. I loved him.
How about J.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons plays Mr. Television himself, Milton Berle. And there is a certain, I don't even know if you can call it an urban legend because it's pretty much confirmed at this point.
Alan Zweibel told us the story, and I believe referred to it on our airwaves as an anaconda.
Yes. a version of that moment is represented in this film. There's an interview circulating. I think J.K. Simmons did it with, I want to say the AV Club, but I might be wrong on that. But there's an interview circulating where he discussed, you know, learning about the prosthetic.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, so you've got this wonderful cast of supporting cast of people like of notable names, and then you've got this sort of core group in the, you know, of folks that looked the part. Like they did a really good job of casting as far as like capturing appearance without like, I mean, they weren't doppelgangers, you know, but that's not what you want.
No.
Like you want people who are evocative of the thing rather than, a copy of the thing,
right?
Because, you know, then you're just doing a caricature and nobody wants that. So, and so the movie itself, a lot of tracking shots, which I think did a great job of sort of lending itself to capturing the claustrophobia of like trying to maneuver backstage during a busy production. Like I said, the performances are all really strong. Like you said, I think some people maybe had different expectations for the film. Even folks I talked to were like, oh, I thought it was a documentary. And then I'm like, wait a second, that's not Dan Aykroyd. So there was a little bit of confusion as to what the movie actually was. So I think that probably didn't do it any favors as far as the way people received it. But as someone who had a pretty firm idea of what the deal was going to be, like, I loved it. Like I love that period of the show. I love a good origin story anyway, and this is a great way to do it. Like, I'm not a soup to nuts kind of guy, but like, you want to give me like a, you know, you want to give me the key 90 minutes of how a story began. Like, yeah, let's go. Saturday night, I would go see it. If you have any affection or affinity for SNL in general, particularly those early years, I would say you should really check it out because it was a heck of a watch.
Only in theaters or is it streaming?
It is only in theaters for the moment, but I'm guessing it'll be in your living room sooner rather than later.
All right, we're talking movies with Alan Adams here on Downtown. How about Woman of the Hour?
You know, I didn't know what to make of this. Like, when I first heard of it, I found myself wondering, like, well, how do you make this into a movie? Like, what's your angle? Like, I don't really understand. Like, it's like, oh, it's a creepy serial killer was on the dating game. Like, that is a fascinating bit of sort of, you know, pop culture minutia. But like, how do you spin that out into a feature length film? And what they've done, and so it's so as I mentioned before, Anna Kendrick in her directorial debut, she also stars, and it was written by Ian McDonald. And it's basically we have our Anna Kendrick character, Cheryl. She's an aspiring actress living in L.A., but she's having some real trouble getting gigs. Her agent is sending her on these auditions that aren't really amounting to much. She's about ready to give up, and her agent calls and says, "You know what? I have this thing for you." She's like, "Oh, great. What is it?" She's like, "Well, it's a television show." "Oh, fantastic." question. And it eventually comes out that she is being asked to be a contestant on The Dating Game because she'll get seen.
Yeah. Which a lot of actors did back in the day.
Right. And it's so she eventually agrees to it. Like, she's struggling. She's making some questionable choices. Like, she's got a weird relationship with her neighbor, this guy Terry, played by Pete Holmes, who's only in a couple scenes, but he's great. And interspersed through with this story are we're shown flashbacks or the occasional flash forward of the late 70s, and our guy Rodney Alcala, played, I mean, amazingly by Daniel Zavato. And basically we get to watch him lure women out into the desert and murder them. Yeah, interspersed throughout this thing. And then, you know, we get to the dating game, and and there he is, bachelor number three.
Wow.
There's a subplot involving a woman who is in the audience who maybe recognized him from a previous event. And we basically watch. So it's fascinating to see a story like this play out when we have all the information and the people we're watching don't. Sometimes that can be a little tedious, but I think it really worked here because it's a difficult task to both elevate and maintain tension when the end result is already known.
Right.
And so by giving us this sort of like by doling out the information while also sort of forcing us to watch these people in the same space, not knowing the full extent of one another's stories, it's really fascinating. It worked really well, I thought. Special shout out to Tony Hale, who plays air quotes Ed Burke, who is basically Jim Lang. We watch the, you know, her basically blow up the dating game because she realized that this wasn't what she wanted to do. I mean, it's weird to say no spoilers because, again, we already know how this all plays out. But in terms of the details, I think I'll leave that up to folks who want to watch the movie, which is, I got to say, pretty well made, particularly for a first-time director. Mm. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, she's been on film sets, you know, half her life at this point, longer. But still, like, just because you can do it in front of the camera doesn't mean you can do it in behind the camera. And, for a first time out, I think she's done a really great job. It's a tight script. I mean, the movie, like, credits to credits is like 85 minutes. Mm. Like, it's like it is an easy, quick watch. For those sensitive to certain types of violence, I would say there are some moments that are a bit troubling. Although for the most part, they're handled with some delicacy. There's nothing particularly graphic shown on screen. Certainly not in the moment. It's mostly aftermath and that sort of thing, which I think is the right choice. Generally is, as far as that goes. But Kendrick, you know, I mean, doing double duty as writer, as I'm sorry, as director and actor. I mentioned Zavato, who I hadn't seen in anything before, but he was phenomenal. I mentioned Tony Hale, Pete Holmes, like just a really good cast in service of a story that, I don't know how to put this exactly. It's not that it's slight or insignificant, but it's just a very, it's a very small moment in time represented really quite, I mean, really quite deftly. And I feel like it's yet another reason, aside from sort of time period, that it's, it weirdly fits as a double feature with Saturday Night. Mm. Like, you know, that sort of world of the 1970s, specifically the world of 1970s television and the attitudes that sort of inform that time, both with regards to, you know, the state of entertainment, the state of male-female dynamics, you know, all of that stuff. Like, they are of a piece, I would say, and not necessarily an anticipated double feature, but an interesting one.
Well, yeah, I hope it works, and I hope it opens up some opportunities, because I feel like Hollywood has underused Anna Kendrick because they don't know quite what to do with her.
You know, she strikes me as the sort of person who maybe gets bored easily. Mm. And I mean, I don't know that Hollywood has been really all that interested in doing giving anyone anything that's challenging.
Right.
And it's like, well, Anna, I'm sorry. Do you want to do a Marvel movie? How about a DC movie? A Fast and Furious movie? Well, Jesus, Anna, we're out of ideas.
Yep.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. So I don't suppose you have Pitch Perfect 4 in your pocket, do you? But yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. I think she does sort of get short shrift just because she is a little different. Mm. You know, she's funny in a way that not everyone gets. She's pretty in a way that's not necessarily conventional. You know, she has talents and attitudes that don't necessarily mesh super well with, as you said, the current state of Hollywood. You know, she's the sort of person, like, I mean, there's like, I don't know, could she have been like a Hepburn adjacent kind of figure, like doing screwball comedies in the 1940s? Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But I mean, they don't make those movies anymore.
Right.
And so for her to sort of be like, you know what, I'm going to make my own movies. Like, I hope that, you know, it is one of the relatively few benefits, I think, that have come from the explosion in streaming, is that, you know, some of these services can write a check for someone and be like, hey, people know who you are. Make a movie. We'll see what happens. If it goes well, great. If it doesn't, we'll just make four more next week.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, so yeah, no, a couple of good ones this time.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing both of them. Alan Adams talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you next Monday.
Yes, sir.
It's about 17 to go before the top of the hour. We'll take a break when we come back. And this time we meet it. The good, the bad, and the ugly next on Downtown. In today's busy world, it's important to have an insurance agent you can count on. At